Many moons ago, Joshua P. Warren sent us a replica of Robert the Haunted Doll. We opened him up. Nobody wanted him. We sent him to a woman named Marianne who just loves him. But there's a picture of him on our Coast to Coast Digicam at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back with Joshua P. Warren. We'll get to your calls in just a second. Tell us a little bit more about the Asheville Mystery Museum, Josh.
Well, you know, it is sort of the culmination of all of my adventures and explorations around the world. The Asheville Mystery Museum is in Asheville, North Carolina, and I created it about 4 years ago, I guess. It is in the basement of the Asheville Masonic Temple, which is 100 years old, and it has a wide variety of strange things that I brought back from my journeys. For example, when I went to Transylvania in Romania in 2012, I went to a town called Sighișoara, where Vlad the Impaler was born, and I was able to obtain a cross that had belonged to a family for generations to ward off evil spirits. I've got that there. I've got the infamous alien statue that supposedly comes to life at night that was owned by Art Bell. I have got Civil War artifacts, and I have got my laboratory on display there, which includes all kinds of electrostatic generators and Tesla coils and Wimshire machines. And as a matter of fact, less than a week ago, I added a new electrostatic generator to my collection. And so we do experiments there. But just before I came back from Puerto Rico this last time around, maybe a week before, I got a call from a friend of mine in Puerto Rico, and he said, "Hey, Josh, I got something you might want to have in your museum." I said, "Oh, yeah, what's that?" He goes, "Yeah, it's a chupacabra head."
A chupacabra head?
I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, yeah, it's just a chupacabra head. He was, you know, real matter of fact about it. He told me that there was a town in Puerto Rico called Aguas Buenas, and there had been a flap recently of pets and livestock having their blood sucked. And, of course, chupacabra means goat sucker, which is just a reference to these creatures having their blood sucked. And when this flap ended, some kids went into a crawl space under a house, and they found the remains of some kind of creature, and they retrieved the skull of this creature, and that skull ended up in my friend's hands, and he gave it to me, and so that skull has just been put on display at the Asheville Mystery Museum, along with an alien crystal skull, very reminiscent of the last Indiana Jones movie. I have a wand that I brought back that a Santero made, and this is not something that, you know, you can just walk into a gift shop and get. I mean, this is the real deal, a wand that has a living spirit inside of it. I'm very proud, George, of the things that I've been able to bring to the museum, and it kind of makes me feel like a modern Robert Ripley, and people who come to Asheville and then visit me and engage in our tours and ghost hunts get to go and see all these things.
That's exciting. All right, to the phones we go. Let's go first to Fort Smith, Arkansas. John's with us east of the Rockies. Hey, John, good evening.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
We sure can, loud and clear.
Awesome. First of all, I want to thank you guys. This is a very interesting show. I actually haven't been familiar with the Robert Haunted Doll before listening to this. I want to ask you, Joshua, how can we demonstrate this to the skeptics among us that this doll, you know, possesses some sort of evil qualities to it?
Good question. How can you convince people that the doll is the real deal, Josh?
Yeah. Well, you know, first off, let me say that I don't see it as my job to convince anybody of anything. I'm simply there as a researcher to try to document what's happening. And I feel that, you know, when it comes to convincing people that the doll has some evil quality, well, you would have to, I guess, be in a situation where this thing was trying to strangle you, for example, and he's not capable of doing that anymore. I mean, he's in a glass case in a museum there in Key West. But ultimately, what we really need is for the caretakers of Robert to put a live 24-hour-a-day camera on Robert. I think that's the step number one. I think that it would be good for them commercially to do that because it is a museum. They have fantastic displays in the museum, and it takes money to keep things open. I believe that that would be a wonderful thing to do, to just put a live webcam on Robert so people could look in and check him out anytime. And secondly, I really, really believe that Robert has to be X-rayed so that we know exactly what may be within his structure. So betwixt those two things, I mean, that would go a long way toward proving whether or not this doll has some ability to animate and come to life, and whether or not there's something inside him that's truly extraordinary.
What if it's just merely this voodoo-type magic that has him possessed, doing what he does?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a wonderful point, because it could be that Robert himself does not necessarily animate, but that there is some kind of magic in him that makes people perceive that. For example, now, again, I have never literally seen Robert the doll move in front of me in some kind of a quick physical
right.
way. But when I was doing my investigation, I was taking all kinds of measurements and getting these like weird electromagnetic pulsations around him that I couldn't explain. And the museum was open for business that day, and there was a couple from New Jersey who came into the room, and they were fascinated by what I was doing. And at one point, I had my back turned, and both of them gasped. I heard them go, oh! And I turned and said, what happened? And both of them started flipping out, saying that they saw Robert move. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I got my back turned, and he moves. And they said they saw him uncross and then cross his legs.
Huh.
And both of them were so adamant. I actually had a video camera with me, of course, and I videotaped an interview with them, both saying as enthusiastically and adamantly as possible they had seen this happen. Well, for the next hour, of course, I put the video camera on Robert, and I didn't see it. So it was very frustrating for me, but those people were able to go home saying, this thing moved. This thing literally moved. And I have to tell you that before I went down there, I had wondered in the back of my mind, is this some kind of a little clever amusement park gimmick? You know, do they have some little gears or pulleys or invisible strings hooked to Robert that they use to just kind of mess around with tourists? It'd be a brilliant idea, really, if they did that. But I examined this doll, and I'm telling you, they don't have anything hooked up to him. He's just a doll in a chair, and yet I can give you hundreds, if not thousands, of reports from people who say he's moved. So there's something very real going on here.
Indeed there is. Lori in Clarkston, Washington. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. First, I just wanted to say hi to you.
Well, hi.
My dad's actual name was Ralph.
You got that's really my middle name.
I know. He was in the Navy.
How about that?
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Yeah, Joshua, you kind of answered my question a little bit, but do you think he's like demonic from, you know, like another realm, or do you think the voodoo like made him alive?
Well, you know, here and Lori, you know, that's a very good question. And yet I must say that I'm not sure that it's ever fair, really, to say that Robert is demonic. There was an event, and I'm trying to make sure that I have my facts straight here. I think it was sometime around 2004. They do this thing called Fantasy Fest in Key West, and it's a huge celebration. It's one of the biggest in the country, and if I'm not mistaken, it was around 2004 where they decided to hold, the city planners, that is, Blame It on Robert Day.
because all these years, people have talked about Robert being the figure that Eugene and others said was responsible for some kind of terrible act. Excuse me.
Sure.
And so, basically, they had this day where they sort of paraded Robert around, and people would blame their problems on Robert. It was a cathartic experience. But can you imagine if this little doll has feelings, how that would be perceived by the doll? This would be perceived as an act of aggression toward the doll. And therefore,
he'd go crazy.
Yeah, if this doll actually has become the scapegoat for all of the sort of pent-up frustrations that people have, and again, we look at magic as being almost a mirror that reflects back what is projected onto it, it may very well be that Robert himself is not a demonic figure, but that he has become the target of a lot of negative energy, which he's just projecting back on the rest of us. So we can't look at this in such black and white terms. You know, people ask me all the time, is a ghost good or evil? Well, in some cases, we just have to say, well, if I walk into a restaurant and there are 25 people sitting around, are those people good or evil? Well, for one thing, I don't know. But there are all kinds of shades of gray that, you know, people fall into in reality. People do good things. People do bad things. And I think that these objects that animate must be viewed with the same level of complexity.
All right. We've got Lee now in Greenwood, Arkansas. Thank you for calling, Lee. And you're up with Joshua P. Warren. Go ahead.
Thank you both for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have to challenge, you know, the idea that an inanimate object could possibly, you know, cause any kind of problems in our animate universe. I don't understand. You know, I certainly believe that supernatural forces, as far as, you know, things that we can't understand regarding, like, the universe, you know, I just don't see how a doll made out of, you know, objects that come from this earth could possibly.
Ah, there are many objects
upon ourselves.
Well, let me tell you, Lee, there are many objects that are possessed, many, many, many. And there are various museums around the country, Joshua, with these possessed objects that somehow spirit attaches themselves to.
Well, yeah, and see, here's the thing to realize, Lee, and I understand exactly where you're coming from, but the reality is Robert and all these other objects are not really made from things that different than what human beings are made from. I mean, in terms of what you can see under a microscope, I mean, if you take a human being and you put them in a meat grinder, and you put what's left over under a microscope, you see, you know, various carbon atoms and hydrogen and oxygen and all these things that are actually consistent throughout the universe. It goes back to the concept that, well, we're all made of stars. The idea that from a physical perspective, all things in this universe have some very common relationship, carbon-based, in terms of organics. And so, therefore, if you can't tell the difference under a microscope between the minerals and the elements that make up a human versus some of the minerals and elements that make up these inanimate objects, we have to consider that it's not about what's physically there. It's about how those things are able to attach with energy patterns. So what you could almost say is that life may be defined from not just the perspective of a particular set of molecules and energy patterns that meet in a certain way, but that maybe anything that resonates has some life. Maybe anything that's moving, maybe grass, maybe rocks, maybe everything that has some kind of a vibration has some semblance of consciousness. And this is the kind of thing that Clive Baxter is talking about when he talks about primary perception.
Right. He's passed on, hasn't he?
I don't know. Has he?
Somebody sent me an email last night. I was doing a tribute to Coast guests who have died, Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
65 of them so far since 2003. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. But somebody said that he had passed on. So we'll check that.
Yeah. Oh, I'd hate to think that. He really is, is or was a brilliant man.
He died. He died last year.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, man. Well, that's a shame. Well, you know, he was one of those guys who was pioneering the fact that, you know, if you have the proper instrumentation, I mean, you can pour boiling water down the drain in a kitchen sink, and suddenly all your organic sensors go nuts because bacteria in the plumbing are being fried. That, you know, we, again, have this kind of very egocentric attitude that life has to be life as we know it in human terms. But you look even among the world that we know exists, like amoebas, for example. Amoebas, they don't have a brain. They don't have eyes. They don't have a nervous system. But they
function.
They seem to be alive. They seem to be intelligent. They are able to track down prey. They prefer certain solutions of liquid to others. Where is the life in this seemingly empty pocket? We have to broaden our perspective on what life is, and that may include some of these objects that operate in a life-like manner just as mysteriously as we operate in a life-like manner with our mind-body conundrum.
There's no doubt in my mind that certain objects can get attached to either fun, mischievous, or very evil. And in Robert's case, here's the question for you, Josh. Is he evil or just mischievous?
In my personal opinion, from my personal experiences, I would not call Robert evil. I actually think that he is a much more interesting character than something that is evil, just like the Annabelle doll, because Robert, to me, seems to reflect much more human characteristics, meaning if you were to take a living, conscious, you know, human child and put them in the same situation that Robert has been in, that child would be very twisted and disturbed and resentful of all the beings around it. And so it seems that, you know, Robert has some dark qualities which are the product of how he has been treated, and he was maybe imbued with some revenge elements as well.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Joshua P. Warren, author of Don't Play with Robert, the World's Most Haunted Doll. Beyond Belief, that's our television program. It's internet-based, but a lot of people now have hooked up the devices so they can see it on their flat screen on their television, and it sure looks good. Tom, that innovation has really made Beyond Belief just explode, hasn't it?
It's amazing, and I got to tell you something. I have not one, but several friends that actually have little parties and watch the shows we do. It's kind of cool.
On their flat screen.
Yeah, on their TV.
Super. Tom, of course, is the executive producer of Beyond Belief. We tape 4 programs a month, and they're pretty exciting. I'm having fun.
Fly there.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Okay. And if you need to sign up for Beyond Belief, it's very simple, easy way to do. Just go to beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Joshua P. Warren with us, of course, and the rest of your phone calls. Josh, let me ask you this. Of all the things that you've done in your life, what has been the scariest moment for you?
I would say that the scariest moment aside from things like, you know, walking up on bears in the wild, and that's pretty scary. But when it comes to paranormal stuff, has got to be when I spent a night all by myself at Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. That night, I mean, I'm telling you, I actually literally had the entire property all to myself. And about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, something started banging on the wall.
I remember you telling us that when you came back from there. You scared you to just beyond belief.
The old fight or flight instinct really did kick in on that one. And I think it was because that I had, up to that point, I had been able to rationalize maybe ghostly phenomena could be just the product of an imprint, or maybe some atmospheric anomalies, or something that people just experience mentally. But that was an interactive entity that I could not see that was communicating with me. And I videotaped the whole thing. And I tell people, you know, if you don't believe what I'm talking about, if you go to joshuapwarren.com and scroll down, there's a section called World's Wildest Ghost Photos. It's all free. And this is a whole set of pictures and video clips that I've compiled after 22 years of professional research that I think are the most credible. And I have got footage from that night on there, and you can go and see for yourself whether or not you would be as disturbed as I was by what was messing with me in my room that night.
So I wanted to ask you about American Horror Story, Freak Show, clowns, that clown. As you know, I don't like clowns.
Right.
This is an evil-looking clown, Josh. He's scaring the living daylights out of people.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I don't like clowns either. Obviously, John Wayne Gacy kind of solidified any doubt.
And Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah. I have personally never had a run-in with a situation where clowns were extremely prevalent. Going back to dolls, I mean, I have investigated some houses where the ladies who owned the home had a big, vast doll collection, and many of those were clowns, and those were the ones that looked the creepiest to me. But I think it's just, you know, it's something about the fact that these are faces that are sort of exaggerated unnaturally, and we always feel when there's some kind of an over-the-top happy face that it's there to compensate for some kind of a dark intention. It goes back to when we're kids and we're told, you know, don't be enticed or lured by somebody who seems overly friendly. I think that's probably the seat of the clown phobia, but I've never really had to come face-to-face with anything in my career that has been a direct example of that.
Do you ever dress up like a clown?
No, I never have. I don't think I would, actually.
I could see you as an evil clown.
Really?
I really could.
Well, maybe you just solved my question of what I'm going to be for Halloween this year. Because next Friday, October 31st, I'm going to be conducting a big ghost tour here in Asheville. And the next night, I'm going to be conducting my only ghost hunt of the year.
Would you call in on Ghost to Ghost that night, Friday night, for just a few minutes after your event?
Yeah, I think I can do that.
Can
it's
you do
right
that?
About, you know, 9 to midnight.
Yeah, you could be on your cell phone. I'm only going to keep you for a minute or so.
Okay, yeah, I could do that. But I don't know if I'm going to dress up as a clown or not, but you've given me a good inspiration. I might have to do that and send you some creepy pictures.
Let's go to Ann in Los Angeles. You're on with Joshua Warren. Annie, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. And condolences on your sister. I've been trying to reach you.
Oh,
I just feel
thank
very
you,
bad
Ann.
That I couldn't help you because I've helped several ladies get over similar disease. And
that's
I feel
right.
Very
thank
bad
you.
About it.
Go ahead.
Now,
go.
I want to ask both of you, have either one of you seen or heard of a movie called Hugo? It's the 50-ish, 60-era black and white film.
Hugo?
Hugo. You could probably look it up, Paul. I'm telling you. What does this doll look like, Robert? Does he have a black jacket and maybe
no,
like...
No, he's like pants? In a little sailor's outfit.
A sailor's outfit?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. With Hugo, it was a really evil movie. It's a black and white movie similar to The Entertainer. And this man has a ventriloquist doll. But the doll has a life of its own. And people blame the fellow that's doing the voice of him doing things and being an alcoholic, etc. But the doll, when he locks him up, the doll protests and bangs and everything, and they think he's doing the ventriloquist act, but he's not. The whole thing is, and when you mentioned a symbol on his sleeve, it really made me think this doll is really evil. And if it isn't manipulated by Harp with some kind of a chip, it has to be something to do with demonic, like you. I know how you feel about Ouija boards. And this,
yeah, hate them.
So, well, you know how they say don't ask for it because you're bringing evil demons or spirits? This doll was much like the Dorian Gray story or Daniel Webster or The Hunting, the movie The Hunting with Julie Harris.
That was black and white. That's a classic.
It absorbs the spirit of the human being. And like you said, I love the way you described the flesh being crushed and it's the same minerals, the same everything inside a human that it would be in the construction of the doll. This doll might be manipulated by an evil spirit because this man, the entertainer, sold his soul to the devil. So the doll had to get out like a genie and absorb that man's soul. At the very end of the film, the little doll is walking back and forth across this Orpheum. It's a British movie. It's at the Orpheum. And
he took over the man, didn't he?
Yes. It's horrible.
All right, Josh, I haven't heard of Hugo.
No.
I can't even find it.
No, Anna, I'm going to watch it now. I've never heard of Hugo either, but it sounds like another great example of addressing this issue of what is life? Is life something that has to come exclusively from some exterior source, or is it something that we can give it? Well, let me put it this way. There is this thing called tulpas that I love to talk about. Tulpas are externalized thought forms that seem to take on a life of their own. For example, there was an author in the 1920s named Walter Gibson who lived in Greenwich Village in New York. And he was a very prolific novelist in the age when the shadow was a popular character. The shadow was a crime fighter, and he was
very popular.
All over the radio, and there was a movie made at one point with Alec Baldwin as the Shadow. And Walter Gibson, he could crank out sometimes two complete full-length Shadow novels in 1 month. And he did this month after month after month. And after Walter Gibson left that house, people who moved in said the house was haunted by his fictional characters, that sometimes they would see the Shadow dashing down a hallway or some villain whipping around the corner. And it seemed like that he had been focusing so intently on these characters that they became externalized thought forms. And there are many, many examples of this throughout the centuries. And it's known mostly these days by the Tibetan term, the tulpa, T-U-L-P-A. And I've done a lot of experiments with tulpas. And in fact, at my Asheville Mystery Museum, we even did an experiment last year where we had a group of people come together to create tulpas, and I think we were able to demonstrate experimentally that they were able to do so successfully with surprisingly minimal effort. There's a report that you can read at joshuapwarren.com that tells you exactly how we conducted that experiment and how you can do it at home. The point being that maybe life doesn't have to exclusively be something that's part of a physical organic chain reaction or something that must come from some greater source. Maybe life, to some degree, is something that we can actually project directly from our minds, either a singular focused mind or a collective power of intention among a group of people, and that is how sometimes you can energize and electrify certain objects so that they are imbued with those characteristics of consciousness and carry them on, maybe not quite life as we know it, but still life nonetheless, and life that we can identify when these things do stuff that that inanimate objects are not supposed to do.
We're with Joshua P. Warren. Melissa's with us now in Troy, Ohio. Melissa, thank you for holding.
Thank you. It's nice to speak with you.
Okay, great.
I'm a really big fan of yours.
Thank
I've
you.
Had five back surgeries, collapsing spinal cord.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Listening to all of your great stuff.
While you heal, just listen to the radio.
I'm praying. Hopefully. My question is for Joshua, wondering when that doll had climbed up and all of that, with all the video cameras and all of everything that goes on and people and their cameras, how come no one has caught him climbing up there or caught him on video or take him out of his little jar and put a video on him and see what happens?
Well, you know, Melissa, all of those stories about Robert supposedly becoming that animated, crawling up and possibly attacking people, all of that stuff was prior to 1994. Since then, he has been usually under a glass case at the museum there in Key West, the Fort East Martello Museum. And so there, of course, was no opportunity prior to 1994 for him to be in a situation where he could be captured, which is why I suggest that now that we have this technology, they put a live webcam on Robert that anybody can go look at anytime. Now, granted, you know, being that he is in a safe environment and under a glass case, it's doubtful that he would do anything dramatic. But even a little nod, you know, even a cross or uncross of the legs would be a big deal. So I would like for them to do that, not to mention further testing and x-rays. But none of the major events that are associated with Robert were in the era when videotaping was common.
Thank you, Melissa. Robin's with us, truck driving in Illinois. Robin, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Joshua, I was interested in the voodoo possibly that was used. It sounds like some kind of black magic, but it strikes me as strange that the doll, that Eugene became attached to the doll. I know you said possibly the hair, but I'm just wondering what kind of Haitian voodoo would cause a doll to animate. But then, I mean, if she wanted to get even, I would think, you know, with the family, he wouldn't become attached to it. I don't know if the curse backfired or what kind of magic that would be. So I was just interested if you ever looked into that.
Well, you know, Robin, that's a really great question, and I want to implore everybody who really wants to see this symbol and give me some feedback, go to warrenthebooksnow.com, and that's where you can find this book, Don't Play with Robert, as an instant PDF. When you go there and you read this, what you'll find is that the honest question is, we don't really know precisely what the relationship was between the Otto family and the Haitian servant. We don't know what went wrong. I mean, we're talking about incidents that occurred in a private residence within a private family in a remote section of the country in the early 1900s. This is not the kind of thing that would have been explicitly recorded in any official record. Now, I have a research base in Puerto Rico, the Bermuda Triangle Research Base, and I'm frequently there. Often I come on the coast from Puerto Rico, and so there I'm able to meet with a lot of people who are involved with Santeria, even Brujaria, things that would sort of fit into that tribal island Caribbean sort of mystique. But it's so multifaceted that there's just no way that we can take the vague details that we have about what may have occurred there in the early days of the Otto family and apply them to something that's specific. So I guess, you know, the short answer is we just really don't know. But I'm betting that somebody listening to this show may have some greater insight. And I have put material into this ebook that has never been presented before, and I hope the next time I come on Coast to Coast, I'll have more specific examples and answers.
When do you go back to Puerto Rico, Josh?
Well, I'm not exactly certain. I have about 7 major trips lined up in 2015.
Wow.
I think I'm going to head back down to Puerto Rico, certainly around January. I'm working on a book deadline, a really cool book. I wish I could tell you about it, but it's one of those things where I can't at this point. But I think I'm going to go down there at least for January, and then in February I'm going to be at the International UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona, and then I'm doing a wishing machine workshop in Sedona, Arizona. And then as the year goes on, I have a lot of other events lined up, and maybe even something with you and me, George, that we won't talk about right now, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're going to let me in on it. Josh, we're almost out of time. Got about a minute left. I do want you to get your websites out and your information. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, George. I want everybody to take advantage of this. There's no catch. I have a gift for all of you, and I want you to go to freecharm.com, F-R-E-E, freecharm.com. Check out the free gift that I have to give all of you to celebrate my birthday today. And if you're interested in this ebook, you can download it instantly on your computer, your tablet. I would love to get your feedback. Just go to warrenbooksnow.com. That's W-A-R-R-E-N, warrenbooksnow.com. And, gosh, what a pleasure it has been to spend my birthday with you, George. And I can't thank you enough for all the wonderful things that you have contributed to my life and career. So it means a lot to me.
Illuminating, Joshua Warren, the book, Don't Play with Robert, the World's Most Haunted Doll. Up next, Open Lines Plus. I want you to go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the story in the news about the image of an angel caught on film. Our own David Schrader sent it to us and said, look at this. We'll be back.